Okay. Are we all comfortable?
Corey, are you comfy? You feeling good?
Buckle up, because this is going to be...
A wild ride.
A wild ride. Matthew, how are you?
I'm doing really well.
Yeah? Are you? Yep. Good. It is... It's Monday afternoon, full disclosure.
That's right.
Yeah. The day after the Sermon on Compassion.
And it's sunny.
It's beautiful.
And it's warm. And it's warm. Summer in October.
Yeah, it's summer. I know. It's gorgeous. And you know what I love about it? What I love about it is that it's like the air is cool, but the sun is hot. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know, sun's always hot. But you get up in the morning and it's so cool and crisp. And at night it's cool and crisp. And even during the day, if you go into the shade, it's quite cool.
Yeah.
But you step into the sun, it's really hot.
I love it.
I love it too. So good. I'm all over it.
I love that the house doesn't feel as hot.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Do you have air conditioning?
No.
Oh, yeah. See,
do
we
you?
Have air conditioning. Yeah, we do. I know. We just.
What
we
do you
just,
make?
Huh?
What kind of salary do you make?
Let me just put it this way, Matthew. Picture what you make and then put an extra zero behind that.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. What is your salary now?
Anyway.
Yeah. Because you recently got a raise. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So, Matthew.
Yes.
We should do some sort of social niceties at the beginning here.
Well, I would like to do something a bit different today.
Oh, all right.
Because I believe the world has gone mad. But they're
mad?
Mad.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. There's wars. There's
right,
hurricanes.
That's new. Yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Yes. Right.
And I think we just need some good news.
Okay, hit me.
So I'd like to hit you with a couple good news items.
Okay, I'm ready.
On September 27th, this news just came out that officials at the Kansas Library received an unusual surprise when a patron returned a VHS tape that had been checked out 19 years ago. Okay, Corey?
That is amazing.
The Johnson County Central Resource Library said the tape, which was actually a Russian film called Burnt by the Sun, was checked out on a 7-day loan in 2003.
Yeah.
It was unclear whether the patron would be fined for the return because the library imposes a 30-cent per day fine, which would mean he would owe $2,080.
Wow.
But the fees, luckily for him, are capped at $6 per item.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, that's a relief. Yeah, because that would be that's a lot less than $2,000, whatever. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to start off with that good news.
That's really good news.
Isn't that great?
I actually feel better than I did like a minute ago. Yeah.
Do you feel better for the library that they got it back, or do you feel better for this person that they've...
He's cleared his conscience, number one.
That's right.
That's a win. He's sleeping better at night. And I feel like this is a win-win. The library now has a VHS tape that they can rent out to whoever wants it.
They sure did highlight that they don't rent out VHSs anymore.
Oh, okay. So there's not like a lineup of people.
No.
Yeah, wait.
And by the way, it was for a Russian film, Burnt by the Sun.
Was the guy Russian?
I don't know, but maybe the whole war in Russia, Ukraine thing, maybe he wanted to give it back.
Oh, interesting. That's a whole new plot.
Yeah.
Plot twist. Okay, that is really good news.
But it's deep for me. It's deeply satisfying. 19 years out on loan.
Yes.
And now it's back.
So funny. Oh, man.
My second good news story came out on September 26th, and it's more local.
Okay, local.
A British Columbia couple enlisted the help of a wildlife rescuer to help a skunk they spotted wandering near their home with a plastic ice cream lid stuck around its neck.
Okay, Matthew, this is actually good news, and
I know that, this good news is coming.
No, I feel like I can tell what you're doing with this already.
So, just picture the scene to build the tension. There's a plastic ice cream lid stuck around the skunk.
Yeah.
Okay. Brian and Myra O'Connor said they and their neighbors in North Van made multiple attempts to capture the skunk after it was caught on camera wandering through the neighborhood with the plastic dome lid around its neck.
Probably felt so dumb.
I know. Yeah. Although this is sad, it was so thin and moving so much slower than the other skunks I've seen in the neighborhood, said Brian.
Hmm.
And I was really concerned. So Brian was concerned. So they enlisted the help of Kathy Kenning, a volunteer from the Critter Care Wildlife Society. And Kenny was able to trap the skunk in a net without anyone being sprayed. She found the skunk's front leg was also in the lid.
Aww.
So for many days, he was walking three-legged. Yeah. Anyway, Kenny cut through the lid and took the skunk to Critter Care's facility for rehab. And the rescue group said the skunk, now dubbed Cupcake, will be returned to the wild in a few weeks.
See, that is a good story. That's a good news story.
Isn't that great?
It makes me happy. Yeah. Like I thought you were going to kind of make fun of it all and be like, oh my word, we're so animals. But you're smiling right now. You can, see? Yeah, that's good. It is good news. I have seen some of those with like...
I love that it's news.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's right. Wait, do you really love that it's news, Matthew? Are you being cynical?
Well, I mean, I feel like a farmer in Alberta would be like, and I mean, I would have shot the skunk.
Right. Right. So, but is the farmer in Alberta automatically correct?
I don't know.
Okay, good. So I'm going to say, yeah, exactly. I remember seeing one that there was something, it was like an Instagram where it was sad. There was like a, was it a bear or a lion that had same thing. It was caught in something. And it was just like, it is sad. And we're talking about compassion today. So actually, that is true. It's kind of nice. You know, they cared for the skunk and this is one of God's creatures.
Thank you, Corey.
Yes.
Corey has a little St. Francis of Assisi deep inside of him. I do.
St. Francis of Assisi. What a gem, right?
Such a gem. Such a gem. Always had a bird on his shoulder.
Exactly. That's right. I know. And he talked to wolves. Remember, he negotiated a peace treaty with the village that this wolf was terrorizing. You heard the story? One of the legends of St. Francis of Assisi. Like a wolf. Okay. It is said.
I don't believe it.
You don't have to believe it. Okay. It is said, though, that this wolf was terrorizing this village.
Okay.
Some people will know the story, and they couldn't. It just kept on coming through, and I think it was killing, you know, animals, but also people. And it is, you know, the legend says that Saint Francis actually went into the forest and met with the wolf. Seriously, they negotiated. He said, "Brother Wolf," and he had this conversation, and the wolf never bothered the villagers again after this conversation that he had. You know,
were there three little pigs as well?
Okay.
What about the three pigs? Did Francis welcome them into his monastic movement?
His monastic. Saint Francis is actually a saint. He's someone that we should take very seriously historically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I have one little thing I was going to say to you.
Yes.
A bunch of people have been asking for this. I thought it would be fun in our podcast to have like a secret word.
Okay.
So like, let's say the word's like, it's like carrot. And
what if it's cupcake?
Or cupcake. Oh, you already said it though. Oh. The point is, at some point in this podcast, one of us, this is a dumb idea, uses the word carrot. And then it's like, and then if someone notices it, they write in.
Okay.
And they...
Who do they write to?
Yeah, they write to you.
Okay.
And then they get a gift card to Starbucks? No.
Okay.
Okay.
Carrot. So, but wait. So how would... They just have to guess at what the secret word is?
They have to say what time it was in the podcast where you said the special word. But so it was like, oh, at 58 minutes, or not, hopefully not that long. But you
do
know,
we announce the secret word first? Do we say, hey, everyone, it's our carrot. Secret word is?
Yeah. We're going to say it this time around. It's going to be carrot.
Oh, we're saying that right now?
Yeah.
I thought you liked cupcake.
Okay, let's go with cupcake. But you already said cupcake a bunch of times. We can go with, sorry, this is people are like, can we get onto the podcast?
Okay, carrot, fine.
Carrot, done. All right. Okay, and we'll try to do it in a very subtle, like, natural kind of way.
Okay, everyone gets a prize. Corey will come up with a prize.
Yes, I will. Anyone only the first person that emails in.
Okay.
Okay.
Timestamps.
I know, it's huge.
Anyway, okay, so everyone feel good today. The VHS tape has been returned after 19 years, and the skunk is free.
So good. I love that.
Okay, so we are in the Jesus Revolution series, and we're talking about seven topics: equality, compassion, consent, enlightenment, science, freedom, and progress. And the main idea here is that most Canadians think these seven values are really good ideas, but I'm not sure that most Canadians realize where these values or ideas come from. I'm not sure most Canadians realize that these seven values are rooted in, inspired by, and deeply connected to Christianity, or what we're calling in the series, the Jesus Revolution. So last week we talked about equality, and this week we're going to have a chat about compassion. And
nice.
I'd love to start with just some pushback, actually, I got from last week on equality. So before we dive into compassion, I got some pushback from... several people just about talking about residential schools. And there were a couple people that said to me, Matthew, kind of do your research, which is always a great start to a conversation.
Good. Yeah, that's a bridge building statement right there. Yeah.
Get totally. Your facts straight.
Yeah.
Do your research.
Get your facts straight. Yeah.
But that apparently they believe there are no bodies buried outside the residential schools. Because, you know, the police haven't been told to come or to excavate. And so really it's all, it's, you know, it's this hoax and I should check it out.
Right.
On Rebel Media.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly. I'm like, where would you check that out? Yes, that makes sense.
So anyway, and honestly, I'm being honest right here. I'm not a fan of CBC or Rebel Media. Like, I do find our news outlets in Canada very interesting, right? Like, so I feel like they're hyper-polarized. But anyway, so I would like to try to explain why I brought up residential schools.
Yeah.
And I would say that it seems to me that on a basic level, even if you weren't talking about bodies being discovered or these unmarked graves, like that at a basic level, the premise behind residential schools seems very un-Christian, actually.
Yeah.
And so, like, what I would want to do, and this is just a thought experiment, is just to say, all right, let's say that kids were well-educated there. Let's say that they didn't suffer from sickness. Let's say that no child died. Let's say that the teachers were very kind teachers. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I feel is that the residential school as a premise, just an idea of removing a child from their culture, right?
Yep.
And actually kind of, what is it? It's a terrible, you know, way of seeing it, but just it's removing the indigenous heart of a child, or removing indigenous part of a child, mm-hmm. right? And making them quote unquote white, whatever
yes,
that means,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I just find that idea in and of itself is wrong. And I, and I'll tell you this, from a Christian perspective, it's not what missionaries do.
Hmm.
Like, I grew up as an MK.
Yep.
My degree at Trinity was intercultural religious studies.
Yep.
We are literally taught to go honor a culture, to find the places where Christ meets the culture,
mm-hmm.
and to not wipe out a culture,
right.
but to actually find the ways in which Christ has already been there before we got there,
right.
and to actually build bridges for the gospel.
Hmm.
So you don't eliminate a culture. That's
right.
not what you're doing. And you don't
yeah.
eliminate it in the life of a child either, removing them from their culture. So what I'm saying is that as someone who like studied missions, as mm-hmm. a kid who grew up in a mission family, residential schools goes contrary to everything I believe about what it means to share the gospel in a community.
Hmm, totally.
But so right there, it's wrong.
Yeah.
Right there, it's wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
But now,
if that's all it is.
If that's all it is.
Yeah.
That's a thought experiment.
Right,
if that's
yeah.
all it is. But now we actually have evidence that cruel things happened.
Totally. Yes.
So again, let's leave the unmarked graves aside, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Those particular ones where the ground penetrating radar, right? Like, just leave
yeah.
those aside for a second. I'm going to quote from the National Post in May of this year,
yeah.
from Terry Glavin, who actually, this is a post about him being concerned that we're not being given the truth about the unmarked graves.
Right.
So
right.
literally, this is I just want you all to know, if you're on the conservative side of things here, as you're listening to this, I'm telling you like this, and if you're skeptical about the unmarked graves, this is literally from an article about someone who's skeptical of unmarked graves.
Yeah. In the National Post.
In the National Post.
It's already a conservative paper.
And Terry Glavin writes this, and this is to quote him, quote, "This is not to engage in residential school denialism or to downplay the suffering endured by Indigenous people in the 139 mostly church-run and mostly Catholic institutions that were in operation from the 1820s to 1990s. This is not to dispute the proposition that the residential school system's policy amounted to cultural genocide, at least in its foundational years, or to disregard the brutal sexual, emotional, and psychological abuse inflicted on the institution's inmates. Given the unconscionable death toll in the schools due to malnutrition, tuberculosis, influenza, meningitis, pneumonia, and other infectious diseases, the mortality rate in the residential schools in the early years was sometimes up to 5 times higher than that among children in regular schools. It should be expected that there are long forgotten burials in the vicinity of some school sites." So he's saying, listen, there probably are burials
yeah.
and you know
yeah.
in at school sites. But I read that quote just simply to say this. I think it's so important for us as Christians to be clear about the sin of Christians that have gone before us. I have problems with ongoing issues. Like I've said this before, issues that come up in progressive circles about white guilt, cancel culture, intersectionality, critical race theory, right?
Yep.
I think there are things to talk about all of them. I think there are helpful tools sometimes, but sometimes they're not. Mm-hmm. And actually they can actually lead us the wrong direction, away from justice.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I'm a Christian. And when I see that my people that share my faith hurt children in the name of Jesus, I want to clearly say it was wrong, period. 3,201 children died in residential schools, and we actually know their names.
Hmm.
We like know them.
Hmm.
They are recorded on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 2015 registry of residential school deaths. So I don't know who is buried in these other fields. But for argument's sake, let's say there are no bodies at any of these schools. We still have 3,021 names of real children who did die due to malnutrition, tuberculosis, influenza, meningitis, pneumonia, and other infectious diseases. And all of those things are treatable.
Right.
They're treatable.
Yeah.
And they died in Christian schools. So finally, my point is, it's okay, I believe, to apologize and be clear about sin without thinking or suggesting that I'm part of some kind of progressive agenda from the liberal media, right?
Right.
And I don't want to be swayed by both CBC News or Rebel Media News, right? I'm following Jesus. He mm-hmm. loved children, and I think he believed that every child matters.
Totally. Yep. Yeah, well put. I totally agree. For sure. And it's just so funny because I feel like you get it. You have the luxury of getting it from all sides because you'll hear from your conservative friends, you know, you're being too liberal, you're being too woke, you're being too progressive, you know, and then, but then of course you'll hear from your more progressive liberal friends who are saying, oh, you're being way too, you're being way too conservative and you're catering to the conservatives. Why are you, you know, so I know you, I know that you get a lot of that. So yeah, I think that's great. If it's true, which, you know, I really have my doubts about these people that seem to know there are no bodies, that are, you know, whatever. Okay, whatever. But even just putting that aside, exactly what you're saying is like, yeah, totally. It's wrong. This is horrific. Yeah.
Have you heard that? Have you heard some of those theories?
About the
children?
Yeah. I've heard it mostly from people that I know that are that lean very, very kind of right and like more very conservative, very right wing. Yeah. So I have heard it. I haven't put a lot of stock in it, to be honest.
And doesn't it feel like the compassion thing? Doesn't it feel like if we're actually like, I don't know, if someone we love in our families was like crying or hurting, really sad, it would be really weird to jump in with like questioning why they're sad.
I know. Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like we're looking at a hurting, an entire First Nations culture in Canada that's hurting.
Yeah.
And if our first thing is like, hey, actually, technically.
Yeah. I know.
Like,
yes.
Wait. What? Yes. Like just process. Like I know truth matters. Truth matters. Yep. And I get it. When people say, if you need truth and reconciliation, right?
Yeah.
So we can't go into truth and reconciliation if there's lies about residential schools. I get that.
Totally.
Right?
Yep.
But I'm like, it seems really mean-spirited to be like.
It does, yeah.
You're literally grieving as a culture.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, technically, all the deaths are actually just the ones written in the report, not in these fields.
Right. Like, totally. I know. I get that we don't have, there's no clear, perfect evidence on either side. So it's one thing to say like, you know, hey, you know, I won't even go. Sure, it hasn't been proven letter of the law that this is exactly what has happened. But when you have this overwhelming amount of evidence, and even what you're saying, the facts are that it's like, we know that children died in these residential schools. We know that children were, as you say, the indigenous heart taken out of it. Like this kind of colonialism, in a sense, in a way, taken out any sort of culture and any kind of heritage taken away from their families, from their mom and their dad, their brothers and sisters. Like it's horrific. So it's like, yeah, like that should be our first, especially considering we're talking about compassion. So,
totally.
You know, it's like, well, that as a Christian, I'm like, yeah, our very first reaction to this should be absolute compassion and love and care. And sure, maybe down the line, when you've built relationships that are actually credible, then maybe you venture into some of these conversations and, you know, whatever. Like, but yeah, it seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
See, we agree.
We do agree. Matthew, you know what? I feel like you and I, we have more that we agree on than what we disagree on.
Say some.
I think that we both like flannel shirts. People have said that, but like, you guys both wear a lot of plaid. I think we both had appreciation for Radiohead and U2.
We do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, there's my phone.
Oh, my word.
Should I answer it? It's Ruby. Okay. Ruby, I'm not going to talk right now. Hang on. Sorry. I'm just going to have a meeting. I'll call you later. Okay.
We both love our children.
We do love our children. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we both love our children. We both love our spouses.
Do you like smoothies?
I do like smoothies.
What would you put in your smoothies?
Do you like smoothies?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I would put in my smoothies? I think I'd do things like pineapple, maybe some coconut milk.
Yeah.
Probably like carrots, like berries. I think I'd put in, actually, pineapple's always good. Mm. And then maybe some mango. I like mango in a smoothie too.
Yeah. Looks like you got some good beta carotene in yours.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Totally. It's one time. We only say it once. Okay. Totally. That is good. I know. I feel like people are already tuning out right now. They're like, these guys are on caffeine or something.
Anyways.
Yeah. Good. Yep.
Okay. Good. So this last week we talked about compassion, and just a quick reminder, this is really quick, but we just talked about the difference between Saint Teresa,
yes.
Saint Mother Teresa,
yep.
And Friedrich Nietzsche, and that we looked at Jesus being compassion in the flesh. Mm-hmm. We looked at the Good Samaritan story, where we see compassion even for our enemies. And we talked about how the early church lived out this compassion with healthcare for all. And, any initial thoughts on that, Corey? Compassion?
No, I love it. I love it. And I think it's so, I love hearing about the early church. I always find the early church so inspiring.
Totally.
When you hear about how, like, man, that's like where the rubber hits the road, right? Because it's way in 2022, for me at least, I sometimes am like, man, I've got such an easy life, you know, and I don't have to do any of those hard things, you know, like so it's convicting I think in a really good way. But no, I love it. It was great. And it really is. Like, I think when we talk about the beauty of God and the beauty of Jesus, I feel like this kind of series helps us see again, or be reminded of, like, actually, this is really beautiful. Like, the gospel is very beautiful. And when spoken of properly, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that I like. I've told you this before. I said this last podcast. I think that I just think that it's funny. It's not funny. It's sort of sad how something so beautiful can be announced and spoken about in a way that doesn't feel very beautiful. You know, it feels actually more like bad news than good news. What I like about a series like this is that we're reminded, like, this is really good news, and it's beautiful. This idea, a God who has compassion far more than either you or I have.
Yeah.
And how we can follow, as you say, follow the breadcrumbs back to, it's like, hey, this is not just a given. It's not just a common sense thing, actually. But Jesus turned so many things on their head, and this is one of those things, right? Showing
totally.
Us what compassionate leadership looks like, you know. Anyways, cool. I love it.
So here's a few things that I wasn't able to fit into the sermons, but Pearl Buck is an American novelist who died in 1973, but who wrote the novel The Good Earth, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 1932, and she won the Nobel Prize for Literature. And she once said this. She said, quote, "Our society must make it right and possible for old people not to fear the young or be deserted by them. For the test of a civilization is the way that it cares for its helpless members." Pearl was the daughter of a missionary. She grew up in China. She became an advocate for mixed race adoption, women's rights, for minority groups. And I just love that line. For the test of a civilization is the way that it cares for its helpless members.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think it's so true. I've been, my heart has been, the last couple of years, I think maybe partly because I'm getting older, but I have thought a lot about our seniors, like our, I don't mean North Langley seniors necessarily, but I just mean like in our culture and how it does sometimes feel like we've been guilty of kind of like putting them away, like kind of putting them out of sight almost, you know, in a lot of ways. I think of my mother-in-law who lives in a, you know, and it's great. She's able to live in an assisted living home, which is awesome. But I'm like, man, it's got to be so hard to be like, for her, she can't, there's very little that she can do. It's so easy to kind of have have people like that out of sight, out of mind, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas in other cultures, I've sometimes been inspired by other cultures where actually to be an old person, like a senior, is you're actually very revered. It's like, this is a person who has wisdom and who can speak into our culture and actually really help us find our way. It makes me sad because I'm like, oh, I feel like so many of our older friends have so much to offer and who need. I just feel like myself, knowing what it feels like to, we all have days where you're like, oh, what is my purpose? Like, what is my, like, do I have anything worth offering to the world? Why, you know, like just kind of going through some of those, you know, sad moments in life. And I can imagine how hard that would be, I think, or at least it must hit you sometimes as an older person when you literally, when there's not a lot that you're able to, in a tangible way, offer back to the world, right? If you're 86 and you're not very mobile anymore and you're, you know, it's like, Sorry, that's been on my heart a little bit about when you think about the most helpless members. And of course, it's not only older people, but there's other groups as well that would fall under that umbrella. Totally. But yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a great, great grid.
And you know, in thinking about, compassion for others and how to treat both the young and the old, I do think that, like, there was a lack of pushback, because I think, like, when I was thinking about whether it's self-evident or when I was thinking about whether it's common sense, right? Because, like, if you read a quote by Pearl Buck here and it's like, the test of a civilization is the way it cares for its helpless members. I'm like, well, that seems common sense to us and it seems self-evident.
Yeah.
So in the sermon, I was saying it's not self-evident in ancient history. It doesn't seem self-evident in the natural world. But there was this one pushback that I was expecting to get, and I didn't get it from anyone. So I am pushing back on my own sermon here.
Okay, let's hear it.
And it's about Buddhism.
Okay.
Buddhism and compassion, because Buddhism predates Jesus by 400, 500, 600 years, something like that.
Okay, yep.
Right? And Buddhism teaches compassion.
Okay, right. Yes,
so you're
absolutely.
Like, well, okay, what's going on here? And compassion is actually a very high value. But one of the, so now I'm answering my pushback.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It was actually very helpful to read from Vishal Mangalwadi in the book That Made Your World. So again, he is a Christian from India, and he knows a lot about Hinduism and Buddhism. And so he wrote this, quote, "Buddhism did teach karuna," which is compassion, right? Mm-hmm. Karuna, as a high value. But Buddhist compassion could not develop into a culture of care. And this was partly because Buddhism, too, believed in the doctrine of karma, and partly because it taught that we must not get attached to anyone. Hmm. So it's like compassion without attachment.
Right.
The Buddha had to renounce his own wife and son to find enlightenment. He saw attachment as a cause of suffering. Detachment, therefore, became an important religious virtue. That turned Buddhist karuna into compassion without commitment to another person. Those whose commitment was to their own spiritual enlightenment did not have the motivation to develop a scientific medical tradition. Now, he's writing this about why in places where the church grew, why medical support, healthcare grew, nursing practices grew. It's like it's crazy. It's crazy to watch that.
Right. Happen. Yeah.
And he actually sees it in India. When Christianity made inroads in India, there's just these beautiful, like he gives the example of one lady who started a hospital in India, and Gandhi called it the best hospital in India, right? In the way it cared for people. And so, but he's saying, why was it that Buddhist teaching didn't have as many inroads to building medical communities? And he said, it gets down to this idea. Yes, compassion is part of Buddhism, right? This empathy or this connection to somebody, but that karma, right? Getting what you are owed from a previous life and also attachment. You should not be attached to anyone is very different from Christianity, which actually says no, there is suffering and pain through attachment.
Right. Yeah.
But you should care.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
somehow what happens to my neighbor is on me. I am attached.
Right.
I cannot be detached from my love of neighbor. And that in a sense leads to very different medical histories.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so anyway, that's my answer about Buddhism to the question that was never posed.
your pushback and your response.
Yes, exactly.
That's good.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
We built the straw man and we tore it down.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Yeah, that's interesting. It's fascinating. I know we talked about karma a little bit last week. We didn't talk about it on the podcast, but is karma, real quick question, is karma always absolutely tied into previous lives? Or is that a big part? Is that a significant part of the definition? Okay.
Yes.
I didn't actually know that. I always thought karma was just more of it's like when you do good things will come your way. When you do bad things will come your way. So
it's okay. So I actually have a great definition and I'm pulling it off the top of my head. So I wish I had it in front of me to read it, but it's karma is like the never ending picture, like a river. It's the never ending flow throughout generations of positive and negative, actions. That reaffect people in generations to go, or generations that follow. Right.
Okay. So, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it's,
okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so, I don't so much understand how karma doesn't help with compassion here, but I do understand the attachment idea. Right.
Right.
I mean, even the fact that the Buddha had to like release attachment to his own family.
Yeah.
Like
you're like, yeah, totally.
I'm like, yeah, sounds good, buddy. Like get right. rid of your, get you know.
Well, but at the same time, you also, I think we can all recognize how there's some really valuable truth in parts of that. The idea of not being attached to, like even Jesus would have taught this, right? Like not having idols, for instance, not being attached to, and we would even see a healthy person, emotionally healthy person is someone who doesn't, you know, for me, I have to not necessarily attach my own self-worth to what this person thinks about how musically things went on a Sunday or whatever, you know, like it's, so there's a healthy version of detachment, I think. But not to that, to that extent. It's like, oh, okay, though, that sounds like you've swung the pendulum far too far, you know, or you've taken it way too far.
Yeah.
I had a friend, maybe I've shared this before, but who felt like he was a guy in Ontario. And I remember him suddenly out of the blue, he was married and he came and said, yeah, no, God's calling me to, he's like, God's calling me to move to the West Coast. And we asked a few questions and it turns out he's like, no, like away from so I'm leaving my wife. I'm leaving like everything and I'm going to do this because God's calling me. And we're like, I don't think so. Like, you know, I don't think it's like you guys have apparently, you know, very apparently healthy marriage and everything else. And he just was like, yeah, no, I gotta go find myself on the West Coast. And I feel like God's leading me that way. I know. I was like, yeah, that doesn't sound legit to me.
No.
Anyways, he wasn't Buddhist.
What'd you say to him?
I said, I think this is a bad idea. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did it anyways. I think a lot of people said that to him. It's like, what are you thinking? Like, no, you can't do that. And he was very charismatic, he suddenly kind of went off the tracks a bit, unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel like the God told me.
That's always a bit, I find that when it's blatantly said like that, I get worried.
Yeah.
Not worried, I'm always like, okay, I'm just going to hold that a little loosely. It's one thing. I think it's so funny how even just a little caveat to that, be like, it seems to me like God is saying this, or I feel like God's showing me this.
Yeah.
It's funny how just saying it that way makes such a difference for me, as opposed to when people say, God said this to me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, that feels so certain.
Yeah, because you can't argue with that.
Yeah, you can't say anything. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of abuse and damage that's been done with that kind of stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, Glenn Scrivener had an interesting little line that he uses, and I just want to hear your thoughts on it.
Okay.
He says this. He says, we're telling ourselves two stories in the secular world. We're telling ourselves two stories. The first story is that we are biological survival machines clinging to an insignificant rock, hurling through a meaningless universe towards eternal extinction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's, yep.
And the second story is Putin should not invade Ukraine.
That's right.
And what he means by that is all of a sudden there's morals.
Yes.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
Who's why are we saying that Putin should not invade Ukraine? All of a sudden there's like meaning and there's morals and there's right and wrong. And there's like, where did you get that idea?
Right.
I thought we were biological survival machines clinging to an insignificant rock hurling through a meaningless universe towards eternal extinction. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So in a sense, why does any of this matter? And so, so we can't have it both ways is his point. And so basically the last 2 weeks on equality and compassion, the idea there is that they're anchored in the fact that there is a God, and so that there is meaning and purpose in the universe, mm-hmm. and that people do matter. And so how we treat people matters.
Mm-hmm.
So equality and compassion matter. And we actually, as Christians, say, yeah, we believe in a God, therefore we believe in morals. And so therefore we believe that Putin should not invade Ukraine.
Totally. You know what? Actually, can I give a little bit of pushback to Glenn?
Push back.
Okay. Glenn.
Do it.
First of all, what kind of name is Glenn Scrivener?
Okay.
Yeah, no, just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. I feel like I don't think those are the stories we're telling ourselves. I don't. I think the second one is true. I think we are saying Putin should not invade Ukraine for the most part, right? But I think actually, this first story is that we are biologically survival machines clinging to an insignificant rock, hurtling through a meaningless universe toward eternal extinction. I'm reading Matthew's notes here. I actually don't know a lot of people that actually think that. In fact, I don't know anyone who thinks that. I think that's a bit of a, again, it's a bit of, sorry, not to use straw man two times in one podcast. You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just kidding.
Yeah.
We always use that. But I feel as though it's like.
That should be our secret word.
That should be, it's more than one word. But I'm like, actually, I don't think people think that for the most part. Mm. I think, sure, that's the extreme version. And that's sort of, it sounds like an apologist's kind of, version of saying, yeah. So what you're saying is this. And I think most people would be like, well, no, I don't know. I don't believe like that much.
Pushback to your pushback is he is an apologist.
Yeah.
And I think he's saying that if you draw out atheism, secularism to its logical conclusion, then that is true. Most people are walking about happily naive. They're not thinking through the implications of it.
Yeah.
And they're happily adopting Christian values is his point.
Right.
You're taking things that actually necessarily don't belong to you.
Yes.
Necessarily. Right. Okay. That's a crass way of saying it. But you're walking around using them.
Mm-hmm.
But if actually you think through the implications of atheism,
yeah,
and of survival of the fittest or whatever it is, it doesn't actually. This is actually it is accurate. This sentence.
But does I don't think. Yeah, I don't. I guess what I would say to Glenn is that I would want to say I don't know any non-Christians that think that way. And sure, you might say, well, no, you have to. This is what you're committed to. I'm like, I don't think that they are. I think they would say. I think honestly, the ones I'm thinking of, a couple of people in particular, I think they would say, well, it'd be more agnostic for the most part, actually.
Sure.
There's not a lot, I don't know a lot of staunch atheists. I think it takes so much faith to be a staunch atheist. It's like it takes more faith than it does to believe in a God, if you're, in my opinion. But I think that it's much more like saying, there's just more nuance involved, actually. Like, I think at the end of the day, you're like, well, no, I'm not saying it's not just meaningless and not everything's meaningless. Like, there's meaning to the world. And I don't know. I mean, God, yeah, I think there's probably a God. Like, yeah, that's way more what it's like. It's like, I think there's a God and Jesus seemed great. And I'm not sure. Like, it's that's usually the conversations that I have when I've had this kind of conversation. It's not like, nope, it's all meaningless, all nothing. We're heading towards. I'm like, I don't actually know a lot of people that actually think that way.
Okay, but judgmental Matthew alert.
Okay. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I can see it actually. Your face
feel
is
like
changing.
They're not thinking it through then, because I feel like, okay, so if there is a God, it changes everything. And if there's not a God, then it true. So like morals then would only become, morals then would simply be like utilitarian. It's like, I share food with you because I think you'll share food with me, therefore I can eat and we can survive.
But who,
right?
Right. But I don't think a lot of people, are you saying that a lot of people think that way or no?
No, I'm saying I feel like without God, it's very hard to talk about morality. And I've talked about morality with some of my friends who are struggling to believe in God and one who is an atheist. And they talk about this thing called game theory. Have you heard of this?
I have heard, but tell me about it.
So the idea is just like, there's like this like way in which you can calculate the behavior of humanity, almost like a computerized way. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends said that, like, that the best way in which you can, the best way in which morals work is eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Hmm. That actually when you implement eye for eye, it's called the lex talionis.
Okay.
That the Old Testament view of eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Yep. I punch you, you punch me. Mm-hmm. I steal from you, you steal from me. It's the best way the game works. And that's how you have a, that's how most people for the most amount of time are actually going to be okay. Hmm. Right?
Right.
So it's okay. Like there is actually their point is there's a mathematical way to prove that humanity is going to be better if you follow a certain rules.
Right.
Because Christians have often said, if you don't have God, you don't have rules. So they push back and they say, oh no, something like game theory proves that you can still have some kind of morals. And it's really just eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Mm-hmm. And that most people will get along better with that.
Right.
And so anyway, so that's, I'm just trying to say that's the dialogue.
Yeah.
But I still feel like those people who are talking about game theory are ones who are taking this really seriously. Is what I'm saying. They're the ones who are like, yeah, you're right. It's very hard to come up with a moral system all on our own. Like it's maybe not so self-evident. Hmm. And so they're trying to explore it. But I feel like happy agnostics walking around just aren't really thinking about it.
Sure, totally. And I think you're right. Or they're thinking, look, you Christians can't even get it all together. Like you guys, you've got like, what, you got 23,000 denominations. You've got all these, like I talked to one Christian who's nothing like you and who, like, it's like, even with that, it's like, I'm sure, like, so a lot of people that I know, I just don't, like what you're describing to me sounds like a purist or like an idealist who's like, who's doing like, you know, dotting every I, crossing every T, and it's like, oh, that doesn't make, you know, and I guess maybe the people that I hang out with more are not that I hang out with a ton of, I don't have a ton of friends that aren't Christians yet, but the people that I have hung out with, usually it's much more of an agnostic, kind of like, how can we really know? Like, you guys, I know that you guys say this, but how, like, there's other beautiful religions. There's so many, you know, like, it's like, how do you know that? Like, it's kind of an exclusive, sort of arrogant claim, isn't it? That, like, you guys kind of have the cap on all this. Like, you guys, you know, somehow Christianity is better than Islam, better than Judaism, better than, you know, like you guys, that's kind of the, you know, be more like that sort of posture towards it.
Right.
And more like saying, I'm sure that there's, yeah, I'm sure in all of this, there's truth. And I try to be a good person. I try, you know, live out the morals, which that's what I like about the series, because I can be like, hey, you know where some of that stuff I believe comes from. I guess what I'm, sorry, all I'm pushing back on is that I just feel like it's just not, it's not as cookie cutter nice as Glenn is saying it is. You know, it's like, because it's one thing to say everything's meaningless, it's all going to pot, like the world's going to burn, we're going to, you know, like it's like, and that's it, we're done. When you die, that's it. So have a lot of fun now. I'm like, I don't see a lot of people, I don't know anyone like that actually that thinks that way. I don't know, that's all.
Hmm. It's a good point, Corey.
Thanks, Matthew.
What does it mean to go to pot?
You know, medicinal, just joking. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I was kidding.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, medicinal marijuana? I thought you were saying pot. Oh, no. As in like cannabis. Yeah.
That's what I meant. Is that what it's referring to?
I don't think so.
You haven't heard
going to pot? No.
No, I've heard that.
Oh, yeah. It means like it's all going downhill.
It all goes in the pot?
No. I think it's all goes, that's right. It all goes to pot. It all goes to pot. Everyone's just sitting around a campfire. Playing guitar, smoking some weed. No, just kidding.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Take the last part out. No, okay. It all goes, yeah.
Sorry. Any other pushback from you?
The only thing that I would want to say is I feel like, and I know, and maybe we don't have, we don't have too much time to talk about this. I feel like one of the questions that I felt like out of this yesterday's sermon was, I think one of the big challenges is how do we compassion when it comes to someone who has victimized another person, what can that look like? I remember there was a church, I think it was in Ontario, this is years ago, and their ministry, they felt like God was calling them to minister to pedophiles that had come out of prison.
Wow.
To welcome them into their community.
Yeah.
And obviously very carefully, very, you know, I think I maybe shared this in another podcast, I don't know, but, you know, and I'm like, man, that is like, can you imagine having a young family and being like, that is a big sacrifice. That's a huge, but
they would have to let the church know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
the
whole church would know that these are the pedophiles.
Yes.
And you would be bringing your children to a place.
I think it might've been I don't remember the details of it, but so my question is like, yeah, how do we understand justice in the conversation around compassion? Like, I feel like for me, I feel very, very committed to the idea of restorative justice. Like, I feel like that seems to be the Jesus way, you know, as opposed to punitive justice, where it's just like, nope,
right,
you did something wrong, and so you must be punished. Mm. I feel as though God is someone who is redemptive in all that he does, actually. So I feel, anyways, I guess it's just a question to say, like, yeah, how do we look at, like, what does it mean to be compassionate towards, last thing I'll say, and then I'll let you respond. Like, I was talking to you earlier a little bit about this, but like Richard Rohr, who I think has worked in a lot of prisons and like kind of like maximum security prisons, where he's, I think, been like a priest or, a chaplain kind of role. And his, for instance, his thing was like, I've never met a prisoner, a male prisoner, who didn't have significant father issues, you know, and you're like, oh, like that, it is so sad. It's so tragic. It feels massive because you're like, what do you do with that? You know, it's like, whoa, what a horrible thing. Mm-hmm. And of course it's like hurt people. Mm-hmm. Anyways, sorry. So I know this becomes existential kind of quick, but I'm like, how as Christians, what does it mean to be compassionate towards, let's say, dangerous offenders or people that have done things that are horrible without any end in sight, you know, let's say?
Before we get to the question, I feel like in future podcasts, I need to have like a little bell that I ring. Bing!
Oh, yeah.
whenever you bring up a heretic.
Okay. Matthew, Richard Rohr is not a heretic.
Bing!
That's right, you don't have a bell. He's not a heretic.
I need a bell. Someone give me
a bell.
Just
because you don't agree with, let's say, 30% of what he says doesn't mean he's a heretic. I have a lot of people I don't agree with.
Okay, in all honesty, I haven't read him.
Oh, there you go. You don't get to ring the bell. What's that?
Okay, I've read about him.
From who? Let me guess. Who wrote about him? Gospel Coalition.
Yeah, it kind of feels like everybody. Oh, my Catholic friend.
Yeah, okay.
Says that he wishes the church would discipline him.
And yet the church won't. Interesting.
Well, the church apparently doesn't have the guts.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good to know that your Catholic friend explained to you that the church doesn't have the guts. That sounds legit. He is a Catholic priest, I believe, right? Franciscan, yeah. Franciscan.
Okay, Saint let's Francis move on to your question.
Okay. Sorry. No, okay, so yeah.
No, I like the idea. I do think what you're bringing out is the idea that, yeah, what you said, hurt people do hurt people. Mm-hmm. So how can we have compassion on people in a way where we say, like, we need to... Yeah. It's interesting because I didn't get that pushback. I got pushback from a couple people saying, how do we love our enemies?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which may be kind of part of this, but like, how do we love our enemies? And so I think obviously good boundaries, like we believe in good boundaries. But what does it look like to actually show compassion to those who are fully marginalized and who are sick?
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough question.
And to name another heretic, Brian Zond. Just kidding, he's not a heretic, but he's great. We both like Brian Zond, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't ring the bell for him.
Oh, good. Okay. You shouldn't ring a bell for Rory either. Anyway, it's just my opinion. But Brian Zond, I remember him saying once, we're all victims. Mm. And I know right away that probably raises the feathers of some people. Are they feathers? No. It'd be like, what do you mean we're all victims? But and he, that's not to say that we don't have responsibilities, or that it means that we can behave it any way we want. But I think he's right. I think that to some degree, we're products of so many things, right? The ways that we grew up, the experiences that we had as children with our parents, with other people, with classmates, and growing up, embarrassments, like moments, you know, it's like, so I get it. And I sometimes feel like, oh, it is like, it does feel like, to me, I guess that's where I put my faith in a very compassionate father, you know, who sees everything, right? And who sees... It's like, yes, you guys see like this horrible murderer, let's say.
That's right.
But our father sees, well, like I knew this murderer, you know, as a 3-year-old little boy who experienced this horrible
trauma or whatever.
Trauma you know, things that led, and that's almost always the case, right? Maybe always, I don't know.
Yeah. Sure.
Anyway, sure. Maybe it's not even really a question. It's just more like it's a bigger, maybe harder look at compassion in a
sense.
That's
right.
You know?
Yeah. No, anyways, I appreciate that. Okay. Well, I just want to end off here by just giving Jesus' mission statement of compassion. And we read it in Luke 4, and he's quoting Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, which is the year of Jubilee.
Right.
And I just love that mission statement of Jesus. And I wanted to share it here at the end.
Is that the, where is that found, that passage?
Isaiah 61. Isaiah,
yeah. Yeah. Like, isn't it, don't you find it a little bit fascinating that he didn't finish the passage off?
Yeah.
Which talks about the vengeance. I know you talked about
and
that,
the
right?
Day of vengeance
and the
of
day
our
of
God.
Vengeance of yeah. our God. And I wonder how that would have been received by his audience at that time. If they, would that have been, like, would everyone in the crowd, when he said that in the synagogue, right?
Yeah.
That was, right? He, would they, I wonder if they would have been waiting for that last part and didn't get it.
Well, they would have, because actually the story goes on to say that Jesus is very clear that he's going to do some things with Gentiles that he's not going to do in Israel. Mm. Like, if you read the passage, he said, he quotes like the time of Elijah or Elisha, that there was a widow.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, that there was this blessing upon a Gentile, but not upon the people of Israel.
Mm.
And so, therefore, it looks like Jesus is hinting that he's actually going to be proclaiming this year of Jubilee or this good news to the enemies of Israel.
Hmm.
And that's when they take him, they try to throw him off a cliff.
Right.
So yeah. I think he does stop right
he's
there.
He's intentional
on purpose.
About like
yeah.
not, which feels very provocative.
Very provocative.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Huh, fascinating.
Well, here's the deal.
Okay.
We're going to end with good news.
Good news, yeah.
VHS tape is back.
Yes.
Skunk
you.
No longer has. Thing around his neck.
He's doing great. He's going to head out into the wild soon.
He's been de-yoked.
De-yoked. Exactly. Okay, is that it? There's nothing more?
No, that's it, man.
My goodness, we just flew through this.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a description of... Yep, that's good. All right. Okay. Sorry, I just went blank
Corey's
for a second
there. Corey's like an old man right now.
What is happening?
He's just spinning in his chair.
Where
He's
am
like,
I?
Well, okay, Sherry. Where are my glasses?
Sherry! okay, North Langley, we love you. We will see you this coming Sunday, right,
yeah,
Matthew?
Love you guys.
Okay,
yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.